and we're set. So someone grab Genesis 8, verses 1 through 4, and let's see what transpires after the flood.
But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark. And he sent a wind over the earth, and the waters receded. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of the heavens had been closed, and the rain had stopped falling from the sky. The water receded steadily from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the water had gone down. And on the 17th day of the seventh month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ara. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month. On the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became visible.
Okay. So we got this. Oh, that's okay. We got, so how many times, after how many days was it? 150 days trapped on this boat.
Wow.
And just sitting there in water. And what else does it say on there? It says that God did what? What did God do? I find it very interesting. The very first verse.
He remembered him.
So it almost is giving, you know, in the way whoever's writing this, it almost gives this indication, well, God forgot about Noah and them on board. Do you think that really happened?
No,
God doesn't forget about anybody. And these are the only people that are alive. How can God forget about eight people sitting on a boat? But no, it says, and the Lord remembered them. And I just find that very interesting that God says, and I remember. And it's just a good reminder to us that God remembers us. He doesn't forget about us. He remembers us as people. And didn't say just the people. It also said his livestock. Everything that was on the ark, God remembered that he had this boat. And then what does God do? He sent a wind to blow across the earth. What does this tell us about God? He's all powerful. And he created what?
Wind.
He created wind. Not only did he create all of the land and the water and the fish and the birds and everything, he created wind, and he creates this wind. And as the great creator, he can control not only the rain and the sun, moon, and stars, but he can also control wind. And this is one of the first times in Scripture where we have God causing the wind to blow across the earth. We have his breath going into Adam and Eve when they were created, but we have this wind. And so the wind and the rain obey him. Later on, when we get into the New Testament, we'll have some more stories where the deliverer experiences the same, he's able to do the same thing. He's able to control. And who does that tell you? Who he is. And so we'll get to that later. Psalms 147:18 says this: he causes his wind to blow and the waters flow. So in other words, God can cause whatever his wind, he wants it to move wherever he wants to go from there. Let's read Genesis 8 verses 14 through 19.
By the 27th day of the second month, the earth was completely dry. Then God said to Noah, come out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, and all the creatures that move along the ground, so that they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in number upon it. So Noah came out together with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, all the animals and all the creatures that move along the ground and all the birds. Everything that moves on the earth came out of the ark, one kind after another.
Okay, so here we have this picture of the ark. That obviously, the wind's blowing, and all of a sudden the flood waters dry up from on the earth. And Noah opens up the covering of the boat and saw the surface of the ground. And then two more months go by, and then alas, the earth was completely dry. God says to Noah, leave the boat, you and your wife, release all the animals, open it up. Who opened the door this time?
God.
Did God open the door?
Noah.
Noah opened the door this time. God gave them instructions. Go ahead and let everything out this time. So now we got to the point. This is a picture of the map, fairly similar, where the Mount Ararat is located up there. You can see where the Caspian Sea is in Iran. It's a little north of Iran, kind of straight up from Babylon and Iraq all the way up to the top. And you can kind of get a picture of where the boat, kind of located in, on the mountain of Mount Ararat. I think they said they found it, or they found pictures of it. And
they've dug down and found what looks like a foundation.
Yeah, something.
It was big. It's large enough that it could be.
Yeah.
How long would it be around? It's hard to say.
With wood, yep, and who knows? But again, if that is a picture, it's in that area. That's where it's at. What takes place? God's told Noah back in the before he built it that he's going to save Noah and on all those he took in the ark. And what happens? They all got saved, right? They were all got saved. And this teaches us about God again, that he is what?
Good to his word.
Good to his word. He's faithful, and what he says he's going to do, he's going to fulfill it, and that he doesn't change from that. The flood account is a true account. There are lots of theories out there. If you go to the Grand Canyon and visit that, you'll see these theories all over the walls of some of the buildings that, hey, this is how they associate that the Grand Canyon came about. The Grand Canyon could have come from the flood, but there's these theories out there that it just evolved and that type of thing. But no, the flood really happened. We also have the Chinese, which is the oldest written language in the it is listed as some of the oldest language in the world. And the Chinese language has their word for salvation is, or for flood is not salvation, for flood is 8 men in a boat. That's how they draw it. So you figure it's a boat and then there's 8 people sitting on it. Where'd they get that word for flood? Obviously someone came and started that in there when they started doing the pictures on it. Pretty cool stuff. Who else would be an eyewitness to the flood? Give us an actual count.
Angels.
Who else?
Demons,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The devil. Mm-hmm. God himself is an eyewitness to this whole thing. He arranged it. He gave us the account. So all this was there. Why did God choose men to write this account down? What would be the reason that God would want us to know about the flood?
So that God can let us know that he created us so he could destroy us too if he wanted to.
I guess he could have done that, but I don't necessarily go along with that line of thinking. I would think that, God has the power to do everything, so yeah, he can destroy us. He doesn't want to destroy us. It grieved him very much when he did this, when he made that move to do that. I'm going after more for the question of what would be the reason that God would want this listed.
To know that he cannot tolerate the pure evil
that
the world
is contained. Yeah, he wouldn't want to be tolerated the pure evil. How about that God wouldn't want mankind to twist the truth? In other words, the Grand Canyon is a great illustration to use. There's multiple theories that now, after this flood, that's how the world began to come separate with all the bodies of water. Because, mountains formed as the water receded and moved off of the earth. Lots of different things. There's lots of different things. Lots of Christian scientists believe that the worldwide flood in the time of Noah is a true scientific explanation for the vast number of fossils remains of animals such as dinosaurs and other now extinct animals. So, why would the dinosaurs just go away? Well, if there were dinosaurs before the flood, they would have died. There would have been dinosaurs that would have been put on the ark.
Yeah, that's okay. What I was going to say. They had that.
And eventually their species waned off or they, were killed off or whatever. But there's many different things. You also go up to the top of the mountains and they find fossils of fish way up at the top of the mountain. Why would there be fish towards the top of mountains?
Well, we get salt, pink salt.
Yeah, that's the Himalayan salt. Mm-hmm.
That it was like sea salt, and they mine it
up north, up higher.
Because mm-hmm. the water was up that high. I mean, that's a prime example of that. There, at bare minimum, we had an ocean that tall,
yeah.
that high.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it fits with the
God wanted
the
this recorded because he did not want the people to forget
ah.
or to twist the facts.
Yes. Yes, so because this is going to have to be passed on, and it's a reminder.
From generation mm-hmm. to generation.
Yep.
And since he created us from the beginning, he wanted his word to be true.
Yes, absolutely. So, with that, what else does God do here? Noah, verse 20 through 22 says this, when they get off the ark, then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and there he sacrificed as burnt offerings the animals and birds that had been approved for that purpose. Remember, God told him, take two of every kind of animal in the ark, and then of the clean animals, or the animals that were set aside for some, he told them to take extra animals on the ark for the purpose of offering sacrifices. So God knew that afterwards, that, hey, this was going to be the place. Verse 21 says, and the Lord was pleased with the aroma of the sacrifice and said to himself, I will never again curse the ground because of the human race. Even though everything they think or imagine is bent towards evil from childhood, I will never again destroy all living things. And when you see that, and as long as the earth remains, there will be planting, harvest, cold and heat, summer, winter, day and night. Now you think about those things there. We always hear this, the big theory in our world today is it's eventually, if we don't keep watch what we're doing, we're going to wipe off all the cold. We're going to just, it's going to be one hot place, you know, all global warming or whatever. No, God says here that as long as the earth remains, so as long as this earth is here until God decides to finally destroy it, that's after he has called all of us home, there will always be a planting, a harvest. Now, he doesn't say it will always be perfect and that you're going to have, you know, the same amount of span and always have your winters are always going to be the same. You're always going to have a planting and a harvest. You're going to have cold and heat, summer and winter, and day and night. Those will always be present. And then God goes on a little bit further. The sacrifice was to remind them that the payment for sin is death. You know, so Noah actually slaughtered these animals and offered them up on the altar, off the sacrifice. The blood on that sacrifice would not pay for sins, right? No, it would not. That payment for sin is an everlasting separation from God. So the blood of the animals was never going to pay for their sins. So why did God accept Noah and his family if the blood of animals did not pay for their sins?
That's the grace.
Huh?
Isn't that where
grace? Grace, yes. And they had come to understand that what God was teaching them about himself, that you trust in me, that I am going to send a deliverer. One day there's going to be a deliverer. So they were putting their faith and trust in God that, hey, we're going to follow what you say to do and your commands because the deliverer is coming. And so they believe that, and they continue to follow in that way. Let's jump down to chapter 9, verses 1 through 7.
Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. The fear and dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth and on all the birds in the sky, on every creature that moves along the ground, and on all the fish in the sea. They are given into your hand. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you, just as I gave you the green plants. I now give you everything. But you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood still in it. How long did you say?
Verse 7.
And for your lifeblood, I will surely demand on an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal, and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed, for in the image of God has God made mankind. As for you, be fruitful and increase in numbers. Multiply on the earth and increase upon it.
Mm-hmm. So we have God laying out some things here. Why would God, or why could God give Adam or Noah and his family dominion over the animals?
Because he created them.
He keeps coming back to these questions over and over again. You see the pattern here. They want us to really grasp that God has authority over everything, and so He can give the authority to whomever He so pleases, and He gives them some of the things in these things here. You must never eat any meat that still has the lifeblood in it. Why would God say that? Why would God care whether or not we eat meat that has or eat blood?
I think that when by giving us then meat to eat, He's also telling you this is how you are to get this meat, and you're not to do it in this an evil or haphazard way.
Mm-hmm.
The animals to be slaughtered in a certain way. In a respectful manner. You're not going to eat it.
Sure.
Alive.
Yeah.
So I think He's just starting out that, setting up a standard for them. Later on, He'll give them real specific rules, but I think He's...
Sure.
He didn't do it before.
Right. They weren't eating meat before.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think about this verse, the animals rode on the ark with them, no sweat, And I think about this every time, we're lucky enough to live on the creek, and every now and then I'll see a deer.
Mm-hmm.
And one morning, this rather large buck was walking along the water's edge, and I was just sitting real quietly, and a raccoon came out and touched him on the hind leg, like,
uh-huh.
Hey, bud.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, get lost, you. And it just kind of looked like they interacted. And I thought, but the second I stood up at a distance, gone.
Ah.
It's like they weren't afraid of each other. But,
they were afraid of man.
Yeah. I mean, it's just there. I mean, God put it, put that fear of us and dread in them.
Right.
And man, it's...
It's there.
And you know how you feel? That's, you know, if ever you are near a wild animal and you're like, they act like they're your friend, you feel this like, like you're special or something.
Right, yeah.
That bird kind of wanted to talk to me or touch me. And we feel that, I think we still want to hark back to when we used to have that kind
connection
of
in the garden.
Now, it's gone.
Yeah.
I knew the first time.
Wow, that's good.
I moved up here. I was looking out the window. Gus was barking, and I was looking out the window, and I thought, I didn't see him barking anything. So I opened the front door, and across in the field, right across from me, there was about 8 or 10 deer, and they were playing. They weren't running. They were just hopping and playing with each other, and they'd go towards the woods a little bit, then come back out. I stood there for about 25 minutes just watching them, and then they went into the woods and down, and they came out there. I called her on the phone. I was so excited. I said, it was so beautiful to watch that.
Sure.
And now it was just amazing.
Yep. Well, God's creation is one of the things that we have the pleasure of being able to watch. He also says here that He will require the blood of anyone who takes another person's life, and if an animal kills a person, the animal is to die. In our world today, that is changing. That's changing a lot. If an animal kills a person, sometimes we'll have some people rise up and say the animal needs to be put down. But if a lot of times the animal's not put down, there's, and it's the opposite. If you kill an animal, you go to jail. I mean, a certain, if you kill a dog or a cat, you can go to jail for that. There's actually people in prison now that have longer sentences in prison for harming an animal than from harming a human being. And that's a sad part to our world. But God is laying out some basic laws here for morality and for the good of society. As their world begins to go, He is setting now some expectations about life, about the value of human life, the value that God places on it. He's laying these principles down here. And he basically goes on. And why does he say that? Why is God placing such a high value on humanity, on our lives?
Because he wants us all.
He wants us all. There's another reason, too.
He loves us.
He loves us.
We are his creation.
We are created in his image.
Absolutely.
We are in the image of God.
Breath into us.
Yes. So God is wanting Noah and them to understand. He set this out for Adam and Eve back in the garden, too. And with Cain and Abel, he set that out by cursing Cain and putting the mark on him so nobody would kill him, right?
Right.
He now goes to a different level and says, listen, if anybody takes another man's life, that person's life should be taken as well. This is how it's going to be. I require it. And so when you have dictators around the world rise up, you know, Adolf Hitler, you know, and all the Mussolini and Stalin and all these people around the world who began to kill people, there was a reason why people went in to try to remove them from power, because they were taking life, and it's something that God holds their value. All right, verses 18 through 19. We skip all the way over to verses 18 through 19. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. 8 through 17. Can't forget the good part. And it says this: Then God told Noah and his sons, I hereby confirm my covenant with you and your descendants, and with all the animals that were on the boat with you, the birds, the livestock, all the wild animals, every living creature on earth. Yes, I am confirming my covenant with you, and never again will the floodwaters kill all living creatures. Never again will all the flood destroy the earth. Then God said, I am giving you a sign of my covenant with you and with all living creatures for all generations to come. I have placed my rainbow in the clouds. It is a sign of my covenant with you and with all the earth. When I send clouds over the earth, the rain will appear in the clouds, and I will remember my covenant with you and all the living creatures. Never again will the floodwaters destroy all the earth. And when I see the rainbow in the clouds, I will remember the eternal covenant between God and every living creature on earth. Then God said to Noah, yes, this rainbow is a sign of the covenant I am confirming with all the creatures on the earth. You got to get this picture that every time there's a rainbow appears,
God's promise
is coming back to remind us, but not only to remind us, but to remind himself.
And the creatures.
Yeah, all the animals. When they look up and see a rainbow, they're being reminded of what God's done. Have you ever thought about it? You flew in a plane and you get up in the... Yeah, when we get these rains and all of a sudden the sun comes through and you see these things, it's just...
I've always seen it, that it is God's promise, and I've had people laugh at me when I said,
oh, yeah.
And I'm like, no, that's God's promise.
Yeah, man has taken that and says, oh, when there's a rainbow, what's at the end of it?
Pot of gold.
Oh, man is taking that rainbow, and that's what Satan does. He takes the things that God sets up to distort them. Take everybody's mind off. Oh, there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's a lucky sign.
Think about that represents like
yeah.
greed and
yep.
gut running.
Mm-hmm. And I want to be like God, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to think that like, we're making our own judgment on what's at the end.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Or the flip side of that, if someone tells you that, you could say, yes, heaven set the end of the rainbow, so yes, there's a
possibility. I think it's the other end, though.
Well, I'm saying, I mean, then we'll get
it
so
much
that way.
Like, go up, yeah.
Right, rainbows are, you know, you do see this, you can see them go like this a lot of times. If you're flying a plane sometimes and your plane goes through a mist or clouds, you can look oftentimes off because the sun sometimes up above the storm, and you'll see the rainbow up above the clouds even. But to think about that every time there's a rainbow, God is not only sending that for us, but he's sending it for himself to remind himself about my mercy, my grace. I'm not going to destroy humankind again with the flood. It's a reminder to him. So God sets this not just for himself, I mean for us, but for himself as a reminder, to constantly remind himself, be patient, be merciful, be just, be love. He's doing this for people. And it just is a beautiful picture of how much God loves us as human beings. And then verse 18 through 19 says this: that Noah, the sons of Noah who came off the boat with their father were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham is the father of Canaan. And from these three sons of Noah came all the people who now populate the earth. So it moves on, and you can see that in this genealogy line here, we are here, and then all the table of the nations come out of that. So it moves from there to all the nations that are around us. And God, again, once again, lays out these accurate details with he's giving us, okay, what would be the reason for him telling us that Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and then Ham is the father of Canaan? Why would God want us to tell us that Ham is going to be the father of Canaan?
Has to be something important.
Ah, something important. And as we get through, as we keep going further, we're going to learn why Ham is the father of Canaan and Canaan and what Canaan represents. Genesis 11, 1 through 4. So we're going to skip all the descendants. We're not going to read on those tonight. You can read them, read those if you'd like to go through. It'll also tell how many years Noah lived after the flood and so on and so forth. But let's read 1 through 4 of chapter 11.
I have that. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth.
All right. So, here we go again. All of a sudden, just three generations have passed. So, three generations, we figure a generation is 70 to 100 years, basically. So, three generations. So, we got to figure, it's better to get a couple hundred years now. Maybe 200 or 300 years that has passed. And so, you got to figure how many thousands of people we're in those 300-400 years. You can kind of do the math and you kind of calculate it. 90 years, with 9 children, Joe's family, they had 140. So you can kind of calculate that, how many people would be there. But here's this town now, this big city. All of the families, we have Noah and his wife and their other children. And then you've got Ham and Shem and Japheth and all their children and their grandchildren, all this. And so here we are, and they all get sitting around, maybe around the leaders of the town, they're all talking, and we're going to build this big city. It's going to reach all the way up into the heavens. And by the way, if you ever go on YouTube, you can actually see scientists have actually done studies about the ziggurats and how tall they could actually get. Am I saying that right? Ziggurats, yeah. And how tall they can actually get, and they used this. They said, okay, would they have been able to make the bricks and harden them with fire, because they figured this out, that, hey, we can build stuff that's really strong with heating the bricks up. So these weren't dumb people. I mean, they were smart. They didn't have equipment and trucks, and they did this by hand, and they built a tall. And scientists have done it and said they could have gotten up into the clouds with this building. Okay, so here they are. They're deciding to do this. And what was the reason behind it? Oh my goodness! Where does that come from?
So like
pride. Pride.
Yeah, it's like they wanted to make it to heaven without the help of God. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
They wanted to build a tower to go there.
And it didn't take them very long for them to forget the flood.
Right.
It didn't take them very. They would have known the creation story. They would have heard about the flood. They would have had firsthand accounts from Noah about the flood. Okay. And Ham and Shem and Japheth and all that, they would have heard about God destroying the world by flood, that God punishes sin, that he's not going to tolerate it. They would have known about the rainbow, because now there's rain on the earth. So every time it rained, they would have seen a rainbow, or not every time, but they would have seen a rainbow. They would have known what it was like and what that reminded them of, that, hey, God said, I'm not going to destroy the earth. They would have known about the deliverer that is to come, because that would have been, and they would have still been offering sacrifices, okay? They had no excuse for not believing in God. They would have, they just had none of that. They would have had life, health, sunshine, food, rain. They had follow, however, a pattern of moral decline. Okay, in other words, it didn't take very long for the generations of Ham, Shem, and Japheth all the way to go through wickedness. And who was leading the people when they were thinking and talking like this?
Satan.
Satan is. Right. Anytime that anybody is rebelling against what God says, that means they're on Satan's team. They don't want anything to do with God. And so they're moving through that. And Satan will turn everybody away to what will they worship?
They worship
him. Right. There's all kinds of things that false Satan turns us. False idols, the world, the sun, moon, and stars. Satan will turn them away. Birds and animals. Anything that turns them away to worship anything but God. And you get to see this picture here. What were they worshiping?
Themselves.
Themselves. They were worshiping. They wanted to go up to the sky. Yep. It goes back to the Garden of Eden when God told, when Satan tricked Eve into getting the fruit and then feeding it to Adam. What was the thing? You will be like
God,
right? And so it goes right back to that. Today, however, what does Satan use today in our world to trick people up into worshiping or devoting themselves to things instead of God? What are some things today? I mean, it could be the same, similar things, but...
I can see it like things parading themselves and mm-hmm. being like God, or like, you know, you see a lot of people, like, I think we've talked about it, like, they are worshiping nature and mm-hmm. things like that, and that, because it's God's creation, it's God too, but it's like there's a separation
sure.
there, and... Like some people, and they might in their minds think this is exactly what's supposed to happen. They just, they're not as
right.
lost as they were if they were worshiping something mm-hmm. evil in our eyes. It's still not the right way to be.
Yeah, and there's lots of things out
television.
There. Television, that's one, yeah. I mean, you can be...
Any kind of entertainment.
Yeah. Anything that you put in place or that you would say put a higher place in your life more than God. And if so, if it can be anything. Satan will use satanic stuff. People will worship satanic things.
Scientology.
Scientology, horoscopes,
yeah.
things like that. That we put our faith. People put their faith in more than God. And so there's different stars, astrology up in the stars. Oh, yeah, stars in the stars up in the sky. They worship those. And if you get a new image up in the sky, it comes up.
Joy and like look at it.
Sure.
Like, being all of it, but
to worship it,
to like put that ahead, or say mm-hmm. like it's a creation that's more
yeah.
or above, or it's not like.
Yep.
God's here. Everything else is below. It doesn't matter what level of. All that we have about it.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the big thing was a while back, I don't know if it still is, name a star after someone. Someone,
oh, yeah.
I don't know, somebody come up with this thing to send me $25 and I'll send you a certificate.
And
you got it. Well, that's exactly what it was, but everybody was doing it. There was lots of people. I bought a star.
Well, you can buy
really?
There's
6 billion,
you can
millions, and
I
can't even number them.
In air, so,
you can buy stock in air.
You can buy sections of air on the planet. So, I mean, you know... We find any way we can to like monopolize on his grace.
I never heard of that one,
yeah,
but that's crazy.
Wow. And it's just an example of what he's told us, like we shouldn't monopolize on his creation.
Yeah.
And that's what that is. It's, I mean, we're going to an extreme there, obviously. Like,
but one thing I can say, you say about air, and I'm looking at two people here, and I'm guilty of it.
Yeah.
We buy water.
Right.
You can get it out of
oh,
the
yeah.
second.
Oh, yeah.
And I won't drink spigot
they're
water,
they're
but I'm saying, I mean, that's something.
Big time on water, like, to the point where
yeah.
they made it a commodity.
Oh, I buy water all the time, mm-hmm. yeah. And so, yeah, there's different things like that. Is that wrong mm-hmm. for man to sell water? And no, it's not wrong to do that. There's not wrong at all to do that. It's when we put... those things, right, we make those things an idol.
Right.
And exactly.
Even if we're making
yep.
money off of it.
Yeah. Yep. And be thankful that, hey, there's
one
water.
Of the root of all evil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. The love of money is the root of all evil.
Put money over even their family's health or their own.
That's what I was going to say. That keeping up with the Joneses thing.
Yeah, that happened. That's another idol that could be, that could take somebody from
face. Hollywood and stuff. Like
mm-hmm.
Look at the sports stars.
I mean, they put them well above God. I mean, their God's probably way out of their life. You know,
yeah. Yeah, there is that thing. And this is what a false god is, anything in a person's life that usurps God's rightful place. So God's rightful place is to be the head or over all of us, over everything. And so whenever we put anything that in place of God, so we move God from here, where he's supposed to be over everything, to here and put something else in its place, that then becomes a false god or an idol, and we fall prey to idolatry. And it is, and that is something. Go ahead, Lee.
I was going to say, you saying that reminds me of one time I was told a long time ago, this woman and another Bible thing I went to said how in her marriage, God's first, then her husband, then her kids. And I was sitting there thinking, how horrible. Your spouse is supposed to be above everything, and that's where people put their spouse above God.
Mm-hmm.
But God has to be the first.
Oh, sure. Well, absolutely.
It's hard for a parent to be like, God's above my kids, but like that's how it, like, I guess it really is, you know, in like his eyes. You know?
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to like probably like swallow in the mm-hmm. idea, but God will take care of you and your kids, so
yep.
you know, you don't have to worry about him mm-hmm. putting them above him.
Right, and here's where, and I mean I've been to, I remember going to youth group. I was probably 14 years old. I remember going over to one of the host home for the youth group, and I walked into their house, and there was no pictures nowhere on the wall anywhere, no pictures at all, and I couldn't figure this out. I'm like, at home, you know, we had family pictures on the wall everywhere, and. So I come back home, and I was asking Mom and Dad, I'm like, why would they have not known no pictures? And I didn't realize their belief. But their belief was that, hey, we take pictures of ourselves, we're idolizing ourselves. That was what they were believing. That wasn't wrong to take. Don't take this wrong. It's not wrong to take pictures of family and hang them up on the walls or anything. But that was part of their belief. And I didn't know that, you know, but I was just a young fella. And yes, but we can take even pictures of ourselves and make them idols with selfies, you know, the big thing.
I would say, selfies, I think, probably has done that because that increases that narcissistic behavior because you're looking at yourself, you're idolizing yourself, and especially because you can filter it.
And we go to the point to see how many people liked your photo. How many?
Did you ever watch a young girl taking a selfie?
I mean, there's significant things that go in along with it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great example, I think, because you're focused on yourself.
But you know what? I was told I have pictures of Jesus in my house.
Uh-huh.
I was told that I'm idolizing him, but I'm not.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, somebody could say that and say,
I keep a picture of my Bible of Jesus, but that doesn't mean I idolize him.
Right.
I just want him near my heart.
Just a reminder for...
And that's a reminder.
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways to look at that.
I like visual.
I'm
from Missouri.
Sure. Yes. Pictures are great, and there's nothing wrong with them, but when they go to the level of...
Of worship, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... Yes, where's exactly? And so when you look at that, and so we have this group of people. This is what they're doing. They didn't have selfies back then. They didn't have computers. They didn't have TVs. They didn't have that stuff. But yet they were creating something, a building, to bring them and elevate them up into heaven. It says...
It's always just a manifestation of our want to...
Exactly.
The evil that trickles in.
Yep.
You know, whether it doesn't matter what... time period, it's all the same.
Oh, yeah. And we'll begin to see this whole thing here. So as we read this, you got to picture this now. Now remember, God has promised, I'm not going to destroy the whole world again. So now what does he do? And what in these four verses, God gave a specific command to Noah and his children. And they were to do something. What did he tell them? Let me go back to it. At the end of that verse, verse 18, it says this. Strike that. Go back to when God commanded Noah. What verse 7 of chapter 9, it says, now be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. Okay? He gave them the same command he gave to Adam and Eve. They moved from that location, and they went, it says... I forget how many hundreds of miles. They didn't go very far.
Mine just says eastward.
Yeah, they went eastward. They didn't go very far. We're going to get to the map here in just a second when we look at the map on the thing. So here's where they went. Mount Ararat was up at the top. All right. So they moved just down to about right in here. Okay, so if you take the map there, that's 200, maybe 400 miles. Okay? That's not the whole Earth. That's not the whole Earth. They went 400 miles, and it took them 200 years to get there. I don't know, 300 years to get there. Whatever. All right? So they didn't do it very far, and... They didn't have cars back then, so we'll give them a little bit. Yeah, we'll give them a little bit of a break to get there. It took them 400 miles, or 400 miles took them a couple hundred years to get there. But let's listen what these verses say. They said they found a plain in the land of Babylon, and they settled there. And they began to say, and they began to talk about that. They settled there. That's what we got to catch on here. That they found a plain, found a nice place that was attractive. It was beautiful. It had probably... It was very,
To build bricks?
Yeah, they had the stuff there to make, and so they decided, okay, we're going to stop right here. That's not what God said to do.
Right.
And so they begin to do this, and then all of a sudden, one of the cities that they also build, a guy by the name of Nimrod, and he was a very organized, he was a great carpenter, construction worker. I mean, he had the ability to organize and build cities, and so he was going around and helping with this thing. And so, in today's world, this is about 80 miles where Babylon or Babel takes place. 80 miles, I mean, not 80 miles, 80 kilometers from modern day Baghdad in Iraq. And later on, when you get to the stories of Daniel, Babylon is in that area there. They are rebuilding a city called Babylon that is made of pure gold. They are overlaying the walls and everything in Iraq. It's got flowered hanging gardens in modern day.
They're doing that now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, for like a tourist thing?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And this is associated possibly where the Garden of Eden is too. In this area, this location is where, because of the rivers, because the Bible talks about the river Euphrates, the river Tigris, and you can see where they kind of come together, and it talks about the three points. So here is mankind.
Well, they even taught us in school that's where humans were first. I can specifically remember that, even to the point of them talking about the mud was good for bricks.
But for bricks, so exactly.
Books that parade themselves as like, or I mean, the people that wrote these books even went to
hear the Bible. Yes, and so they go there, right? And so I find it very interesting. God moved him up to Mount Ararat, tells him to replenish the entire earth, and they move right back to where everything started again. And again, we have God. So what does God decide to do this time? He decides to do what? And let's read here verses 5. And Genesis chapter 5, and 11, verse 5, and it says this. What happens?
But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language. And this is what they began to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down there and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there, over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth.
So this story is just, it is an awesome picture of, once again, how powerful God is. Because he goes down, he says, wait a minute, all right, I'm going to go down. And he comes down and looks at the city, sees this big city going up, and buildings are going all the way up to the top. And he says, look, the people are united, they speak the same language. After this, nothing will be impossible. They're going to keep right on going. These people are determined. They're not stopping. They're just going to keep right on going. So he goes along, and instead of killing them this time and wiping them off, what does he do? Can you imagine getting up in the morning and your family's all sitting around there, and you got your family over, and all of a sudden you can't understand what they're saying? I don't understand you. What's the matter with you? What drugs are you on today? What happened? What'd you have to drink last night? What's going on? Why can't you talk right? And finally, you get these people who can now, wait a minute, I understand what you're saying, but I can't understand what they're saying. And they understand what they're saying, and so all of a sudden, they begin to form these little pockets of people. And God uses that to split them up and go back to what he told them to do to begin with, which is to go all the way across the whole earth. So, I mean,
right.
And that not only then after that, yeah, he scatters them all over. I don't specifically think that these people were trying to keep this big building a secret from God. And if they were trying to keep it a secret from God, how do we know that nobody can keep a secret from them?
Because he knows everything.
Exactly. Proverbs 15:3 tells us that no one is. Yes, nothing is hidden from God. Yeah, when you look at that, I think there's, I'm not sure if this is the same verse, but I'm going back to my memory now. 15 verse 3 says this, wrong verse. The Lord is watching everywhere, keeping his eye on both the evil and the good. There's a verse in the Bible that talks about where God, even in the dark, God sees. So, I mean, we can't see in the dark, but God sees what goes on in the dark. Nothing's hidden from him. So he scatters them all over. They separate from everybody. They go all over the place. And the name of this town is now called Babel. And I find it very interesting that what do we say now when someone
They're babbling on.
I find it very interesting. It has to come from here. But here is where.
Same with the Nimrod thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You call somebody a Nimrod when they're like not. Yeah, they're like, you know, it's not it's used word anymore, but that's
really.
I don't hear it as much anymore.
It's not a compliment.
It was considered something that hey, yeah. You don't want to be called that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I love this story because it reminds me of kids very much, and that almost like with a God's almost kind of like a teacher here. And then he's like, these are your instructions. And then as usual, they go off and work together and they get playing around and not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And what do? You separate them. And this kind of reminds me of how they're so much like kids. Because I can tell you, especially with the little ones, you tell them, no, you're not doing that. I'm going to do it. You're not doing it. And they, of course, they have to do it themselves because they can do it themselves.
Uh-huh.
And we're very much like that.
Wow.
God tells us, No, I got this. We're like, no, we got this. I got this. I'm good.
That's how you know it's embedded. It's like it's in our makeup as soon as we're born.
Yeah.
And naturally, they try to do something. Either they fall down or something happens that's not the way they planned. And, of course, God always has to come over and help us because we tried and God
right.
No. And so he separated them because they weren't doing what they're supposed to be doing.
That's a great illustration with the kids. That is a very great illustration. You tell you.
I don't know how many times
anybody who's
taken
care of kids or helped kids would probably see that working
there. And we do. We want to do things ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And kids are very much. They must
that's
do
that
everything themselves.
That's
yeah.
The nature.
Yeah.
That we can do it ourselves.
It's ingrained in us.
And that's Satan too, trying to pull us away. Us putting ourselves first. Like,
right.
No, we got this.
Especially
I got this.
A vulnerable child. You know?
Yeah.
Like they're going to be.
Well, I think you're an adult. I can see myself. Like,
don't
this.
You think that...
But I think God has a wonderful sense of humor.
Yeah.
Myself.
Yeah, he does.
I think
he wanted the earth
like
populated.
Current
he got it his way.
I think that it brings a lot of people together.
That's true.
And and it's not always a good thing.
Right. Yeah.
And it takes your eye off... I mean, I think it can create despair in that you just see too much. You see too
I've
much.
Seen,
uh-huh.
You know too much that you don't need to know.
It's one language. It's basically one language.
I just wonder, you know, eventually God might have to figure out
shake
how
up the internet.
And then, you know, then just think if it was gone, we'd all kind of like ratcheted down and like, oh, this is happening in my town, and, or I can help this person. Because you, when you see the internet, you're like, how can, there's so much bad, and how can
people
I help, and we can't do anything. You just
much.
Kind of go into despair, and you don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when you only see your neighbor, but you can help that person, and then you can actually do something. So I just wonder if someday that's going to have to...
That is true. As the time of the Lord before his return, it will become, the world is going to come together and be one. And so there's going to be even times where there's going to be peace for long periods of time, 7 to 10 years, where no war, no nothing's going on because they declare peace amongst themselves. And so they become one, one money system. Everything, it will become one.
That's
as exactly, and that is a prophecy in the scriptures that hasn't fulfilled yet.
You can see it happening every day.
Yeah, you see different changes or different things starting to come that way. Yeah.
Saying those things, but if you actually read the Bible and see it, you see how that like,
sure,
all this, the single currency that they want to create,
yeah,
the mm-hmm, governments that they want to create.
And they've tried it.
Dollar,
they've tried it in different areas, the euro and things like that, and it hasn't worked.
You see these commissions starting, like, you know,
on Sunday,
it's all
the next
that
generation won't even use money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell you, a lot of people at my age think these things are good, like these central governments and these central,
sure,
things, because they look at it, peace and like togetherness is a good thing, and they don't realize,
sure,
it's kind of massive. It's not... It only appears good because we've made the narrative,
sure,
that way.
Yep.
It's not.
Absolutely. And it is. It's going to be one of those things that as before God comes and says, okay, I'm ready to wrap everything up. We don't know. It could be 20 more thousand years. You could be another 2,000. It could be tomorrow. We don't know these things. But we do know that it's going to take place again. And it will take place on God's time. We just don't know that. But it will happen. And why do we know it will happen?
Because God said so.
Because God said so. And what God says happens, it happens. But again, we don't know that. Romans, I'm going to end with this. Romans 1, 21 through 23 says this. And talking about this, that, you know, our ancestors were Babylonian, or Babel, people at Babel. I mean, so, you know, my father's family is from Hungary. That's where his background is. My mom's family traces back to Ireland and Scotland area. Okay, so I have those on both sides. So now I have this. On my wife's side, her family's from Nicaragua. Okay, and so you can trace that, and they trace back to Spain. So we have, you know, and where did those come from? Those people came out of the Tower of Babel. Somewhere along that line, it kept spreading out further and further. And as they kept going on, and God created that in them. And so we have all that, but we're all connected. And Romans 1, 21 through 23 says this. Yes, they knew God, but they would not worship him as God or even give him thanks. And they began to think up foolish ideas of what God was like. As a result, their minds became dark and confused. Claiming to be wise, instead they became utter fools. And instead of worshiping the glorious, ever-living God, they began to worship idols made to look like mere people, birds, and animals, and reptiles. And this is where God begins to say, hey, here, after that. So verse 24 then says, so God abandoned them to do whatever the shameful things of their hearts desired. As they resulted, they did vile and degrading things with each other's bodies. And then they traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshipped and served things God created instead of the Creator himself. There's the verse where they turned towards serving and worshiping the creation around them than rather worshiping God himself, who is the worthy of eternal praise. Amen. And then it goes on even further, and you can keep reading what God does to when people turn from him. God will turn them over to what they say, what's called a reprobate mind, a mind that is only after evil. And God says, okay, you want to do that? You don't want to listen to me anymore? I'll turn you over to that. And you can go right on. And so this specific lesson, and these lessons here about Babel, Well, what stood out to you? Let me ask that before I go into a little bit further with this. But what stood out to you in this lesson about that is just not just about the story itself, but what did it teach you about God's character?
I wasn't going to say what it taught me about God's character, but I think it's scary. And it's something, these are lessons we all need to learn, because you're talking about people that families would have been there when the flood happened, that saw firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
And they still turned away. Well, we have our faith because of the Bible. But these are people that actually lived it.
Right.
And turned away.
Yeah. They were there.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of scary and sad to think of that.
I think what stands out to me is that, you know, he stands true to what he says he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he set something out for what was supposed to be done. It wasn't followed. And although he said he would not destroy the earth again, that did not mean he would not, like, reprimand us or do something that would, you know, in turn, be, I mean, his reprimand was spreading us around.
Right.
You know, keeping us from being together. Maybe that's kind of what's lost today. We've all stopped, like, a lot of the world stopped relying on him.
Mm-hmm.
And we rely on ourselves, mm-hmm. So we think we need to come together so we can get things done. Like problems and wars and things where it was set for us a long time ago, just, you know, follow him and then this wouldn't happen.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
And how history repeats itself.
Mm.
You know, here, they're going back to what happened with Adam and Eve.
Right.
And they're repeating it, yet they didn't have first-hand experience. But they had talked to people that had talked to people,
sure,
that had the first-hand experience, and yet
it's
they
like
turned around and went back to it.
Yep.
It just goes to show you the devil never stops working.
No, he doesn't. He keeps right on going.
Well, he's doing exactly what he did then as he's doing now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Same games, and we're falling for the same
thing. Oh, absolutely.
Just shows your minds are no different. Like, you know,
what is God?
Things around us are different.
Yeah, absolutely. What is God after?
Consistency.
He wants us.
He's consistent.
He wants all of us.
He wants us to be consistent in his word.
Okay. Yeah, he wants us to be in his word, consistent.
He wants our
faithfulness. Yes, he wants us to follow what he says.
He wants us to obey.
Like Noah.
And that's not easy to do.
No, it's not. It's not.
Obey is a hard word. But
you know, I always do. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek joke. I always say, I'm glad I'm on my way out.